Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program is brought to you by the Dairy Farm Families of Wisconsin, the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board. Did you know that today Wisconsin produces more than 600 varieties, types, and styles of American, international style, and original cheese that win more awards than any other state or country? To learn more, visit eatwisconsincheese.com.
I'm Linda Palaccio, host of A Taste of the Past. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello, and welcome to Cutting the Curd, episode 235. Just a quick public service announcement. If you haven't visited heritageradionetwork.org lately, stop what you're doing right now and check it out. We have a super swanky new website. It's much easier to browse and find related content from other podcasts on our radio station. And coolest of all, the new website makes it easier for you guys to be engaged in what we're doing. We love, love, love hearing from you. We love getting your comments and your questions. So check out heritageradionetwork.org and tweet your thoughts from the episode page. Can't wait to hear from you. Let's start some meaningful conversations about cheese. Very exciting. So if you couldn't tell, this isn't your usual host, Greg Blaze. I'm Emily Acosta, and today I'm super excited to talk all things water buffalo. So on the line, I have Addie Raghaven. Am I saying your name right?
Yeah, that's okay. Yeah, that's good.
It's just okay. No, tell
it. It should be Raghavan.
Raghavan. Okay. Well, sorry about that. I should have clarified that with you before. Cheese consultant extraordinaire, cheesemaker. And we also have Brian Foley of Riverine Ranch in New Jersey on the line. How are you doing?
Very good. Thanks for having us on.
Yeah, I'm very excited to have both of you on. So after the break, we're going to be hearing a pre-recorded segment with Bruno Gritti of Quattro Portoni, which is a water buffalo cheese producer in northern Italy. But for now, we're turning our attention to North America and to Southeast Asia, of which Brian and Addie, you know quite a bit about. So first, I wanted to actually clarify for our listeners that when I say water buffalo, may or may not know, water buffalo is actually a completely different animal from the American buffalo. So it's not the animal that you kind of associate when you look at pictures of Yellowstone National Park or a place like that. If you get a bison burger, it's a completely different animal. So Brian, you have a herd of water buffalo in New Jersey. Do you get that question a lot about whether it's a bison or a buffalo, what the difference is?
Yes, sure. We're at the farmers markets in New York City, and pretty much every day we hear, you know, people are inquisitive and asking, is it a bison or is it a water buffalo? And but then once we say mozzarella di buffalo, most people know that. It is a completely different animal. They actually, there's different chromosomes, and so it's a completely different animal.
Yeah. So mostly, yeah, that's sort of how I clarify for people, too. I'm like, oh, so mozzarella di bufala from southern Italy, from Campania. And when I teach classes about mozzarella, I usually tell folks it's not the animal that you associate with Yellowstone. It's more if you see any photos of an Asian rice paddy, those animals that are kind of helping along with the tractors and things like that, that's the animal that we should be picturing. So tell us a little bit about your herd of water buffalo. How many do you have, and how did you end up getting a herd of water buffalo in New Jersey?
Yeah, we started about 10 years ago raising them. We purchased some from Vermont and also some from Texas and Arkansas. There are a lot of small herds throughout the United States that are growing. It's growing in popularity where a lot of small herds are starting up, Delaware and Maine, ourselves in New Jersey. California has some water buffalo. And it's a matter of raising the animal from calves and raising up your own herd, and really keeping it at very low stress for the animal, and getting quality milk from the animal.
And were you, when you first started looking into raising water buffalo, were you thinking primarily of meat, or were you thinking that you had wanted to make some cheese from their milk?
Yeah, the cheese from the milk. They're very they're great at grazing, and I guess they're evolved basically in third world countries where maybe not as much forage is for them. We thought that grazing here, we can make a quality meat and a quality milk to make cheeses from.
Awesome. So, Addie, we had a great conversation earlier today, and I wanted to hear a little bit from you. What is so special about water buffalo compared to maybe other species that we think of when we think of milk and when we think of cheese, like cows, goats, or sheep? What makes the animal so special and the milk?
Yeah, well, I actually think water buffalo is it's interesting. The milk is very white. It doesn't they don't for some reason express any of the beta carotenes that normally that cow milk or cows would in their milk. And I feel like the protein structure is very different for water buffaloes, and I feel like the casein density is very high, which is why you get curds that are really really tight and held together very well. It's very easy to make a cheese that gets dry really fast with water buffaloes, with water buffalo milk. Even like a brie or camembert could get dry very easily in a high humidity environment because of that high protein density there. And of course, it has a lot of fat, very high fat percentage. In India, it's of course used. It's a very high yielding milk for making cream and butter and ghee, which is clarified butter, which is very common, of course, dairy product in India. So buffalo milk becomes a pretty good source for that kind of stuff because of the high fat percentage there.
That's really interesting. So you worked with water buffaloes. Milk in India. I found out we have a mutual friend, Mansi Jasani, who was on our show a few months ago. Hello, Mansi. How are you? She owns the Cheese Collective out of Mumbai. But anyway, so tell us a little bit more about water buffalo in India. Are there a lot of herds there? Is it very common for you to find water buffalo milk?
It is very common. It's like the generic image of countryside in India. In most parts of India is, you know, a bunch of buffaloes and a few cows as well, just walking around and grazing on their own. Maybe a shepherd walking them, but invariably they're on their own and they come back home at night. Kind of, you know, that kind of situation in most villages. It's like most people, the cow is a very sacred animal in India. So even though cow's milk. Cows tend to give higher yield in terms of quantity. Cow's milk would be slightly more expensive in India because it's like heralded as this this holy, you know, this it has this religious aspect to it. But with buffalo milk, you see all sorts of dairy products all over India made using buffalo milk. Invariably, also mixed milk, simply because there's not these are as far as cheese goes, they are. Direct acidified cheeses like paneer and softer cheeses in that class, so it doesn't really matter if you mix the milk. Is that sort of does that help you?
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's very interesting. But you're now based in Canada, correct? And you're sort of just cheese consultant, and I know you guys have met. I sort of internet stalked both of you, or internet. Yeah. I meant Instagram.
Right.
Yeah, and saw that you guys have, I guess, collaborated on some stuff a few weeks ago, or just you went there to visit.
Right.
Yeah. So, what did you think of Addie? What did you think of Brian's herd over there in Jersey?
Oh, okay. Well, my first. So I'm not very well versed with the different breeds of buffaloes. Now Brian has the River Rhine breed of buffaloes. That's the name of his farm as well. But my first observation, I remember telling Brian this, is that, boy, these animals are so big. They're just huge animals. I don't mean they're fat or whatever. They're just big-boned, way bigger than the buffaloes you see in India.
Oh, wow.
And I couldn't believe that. Yeah, it's like this weird thing. And yeah, they're definitely more hairy. Indian buffaloes would be less hairy again because they are more suited for the tropical climate in India. So that's a big difference. And apart from that, the milk seemed very, very, very familiar. When I was making we made a couple batches of mozzarella, and I was like playing with the curds and all that. It felt very familiar. It felt like something I would do in India with the milk there.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that similarity in the actual milk, even though the animals did appear quite different.
That's really interesting to me. I attended the water buffalo milk seminar at the American Cheese Society conference this year, which is what this second segment of this episode is going to be about. And I guess I had never really thought that much about different breeds of water buffalo. To me, water buffalo, I always think of a mozzarella di bufala, but I'd never really thought, like, which breed of water buffalo is most commonly found in the Mediterranean? And apparently it's the Mediterranean breed of water buffalo, which we're going to learn more about. But Brian, how did you decide which breed to have at your farm?
We were kind of fortunate because the American breed is actually its own breed. It came through Tobago and Trinidad. It does have characteristics from India. A lot of it started out in Vermont, where they did start bringing in the Mediterranean genes to the animal. But the nice thing is that it's the American herd is almost its own breed. But like you said, there's so many species. Turkey, I think there's 12 altogether. Turkey, Middle Eastern, Egypt. And in the United States herd, we have characteristics of everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty much an American herd, which is kind of nice.
Do you think that there are advantages to the breed that you have versus the Mediterranean breed? Have you ever experienced or worked with the Mediterranean milk?
I like to think that there is. I'm not positive, but the animal here in the United States is good for meat. Tobago, there was a professor that was adding genes in there for meat and milk animal, which makes it nice for a farmer. And the uniqueness of the milk is being from worldwide. Italy also brought genes in from elsewhere too. India is the leader milk-wise producing. So the Mora is, if you're looking to add genetics to your herd for milk, you would add Mora, the Indian breed.
Mm-hmm.
But for us in the United States, it's more adding confirmation and building the herd within the United States. It's a unique herd. It's what we have here. And you can make a lot of different things, yogurts, butters, and anything from the milk. And you could also have a meat product, which makes it unique.
Yeah. There was actually something really interesting on your website about the water buffalo as a conservation tool. And I was wondering if you could elaborate on that, because I thought that was really interesting, using water buffalo as sort of as a means to care for the land.
Yes. The biggest thing now in conservation is water. And we have watershed in New Jersey. And all along the northeast, we have a big problem of invasive plant species like Phragmites.
Mm-hmm.
And when the water buffalo, if I let my water buffalo out with no fences, they would go around rivers and they would around the delta, and they would graze those areas, wetland areas and also riverbank areas. They wouldn't get foot rot, and they're kind of suited for that area. As these invasive plant species come in to these wetland areas, which is basically our filter for our clean water, these invasive plant species will take over that area and kill the ecosystem. we're using the water buffalo to come in and graze in there, and they're doing a fantastic job, and they're bringing back the ecosystem, the birds, the turtles, reptiles, and nature's little secret. For the United States, we see it as like an underutilized animal, and they're very docile, and we see they have a very low impact on the land compared to any really other milking herd animal. They need less to produce a rich milk.
Yeah,
which is something now we're looking for, you know, as farmers, to keep a low impact on the land and get a high quality product.
Absolutely. And Addie and I were sort of discussing this earlier when we were talking on the phone about, I had heard water buffalo referred to as sort of the divas of the milk, the milk producing for cheese kind of animal. And I was wondering if you could, maybe Addie, if you could talk a little bit about that and what you think of water buffalo, because they sort of have a reputation for being difficult, and I don't know if that's true or not.
Well, of course, Brian is the real farmer here, but and he might laugh when I say this, but I do think they're a bit of they're drama queens. Like when I went into the milking parlor, they were like just like a few of them, and it might be a personality trait as well, because some of them were just really unimpressed that I was there. It was like their space, and they're like, "What the hell are you doing here?" You know, it was like that, and I just found that that funny because I mean, I've worked on a sheep farm as well as a regular cow farm, and I feel like with cows and sheep, I don't notice that behavior. So it's funny, but it's cute. It's still a cute story.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think that perhaps that sort of like that diva reputation is what folks will point to when they think like, oh, well, that's why we don't have water buffalo, lots of water buffalo herds here in the U.S., and that's why we don't have lots of water buffalo cheese here in the U.S., is sort of the difficulty of raising that animal and have it produce milk for you. Brian, do you think that is reputation is true, or do you think there's potential perhaps for more folks to raise water buffalo here in the U.S.?
Yeah, no, I mean, there is some truth to it, but it's just more later involved in it, and the more kind and nice you are to the animal, and that's I think where they get that fever. And Addie knows that we kind of pamper each one individually, but the more you do for them, the more they'll give to you. And really, that's the way it should be. They are producing a fantastic milk, so they get to be the talent, you know, to say, and you have to kind of, you know, do this. Each individual animal will like its own stool, will like certain things, like its fat stats or doesn't like its fat stats.
No.
If you know those things and do those things for it, they'll produce it. So I see it as a great idea for people to get involved with because you can make so many wonderful products from it in the United States. And I think people are kind of now realizing and turning their heads and saying, wait a second, this is a fantastic animal. And maybe we should, you know, put a little effort and time. We've been raising them for a decade now, and it's a long road, but I think it's worth it. And I think Addie thought so, too, when we were working with the milk. It was, you know, it's fantastic, and it's
beautiful. The cheese that comes out of water buffalo's milk is super delicious. So, or at least the ones that I've had from Northern Italy and from Southern Italy. I don't think I've had any United States water buffalo cheese. I know that they exist, but I haven't tried any of them yet. But I would love to ask both of you if there's one sort of takeaway that you want our listeners to walk away with, and or if you know, anyone wants to learn more about water buffalo and about water buffalo in the U.S., in North America, because obviously, Addie, you're in Canada. What would that be? And I guess we'll start with Brian.
I would say that if anyone is interested in water buffalo farming or on a culinary end, please contact us. We really enjoy trying different things. Addy came down and showed us a whole world of paneer and mozzarella and all his thoughts, and we like to have other people do the same. And it doesn't have to be, it could be pastries, it could be yogurts, it could be anything. Yeah. And to us, I think we should all kind of look to expand. And there's many species of water buffalo to look at. And that's my takeaway, would be to see if more people get involved and see what comes out of it. And there's a lot of great things that could come out of this. You know, it's a great milk.
Yeah, absolutely. And how about you, Addy? What sort of final thoughts do you have?
Well, I'll talk more about the cheese making aspect. For me, I think maybe this is a little premature to say that, but I feel like buffalo milk is the next frontier as cheese making goes, because there are very few producers in the world who are making this cheese, and I hope more people will get into it, because we need more minds to put at work to make really good buffalo milk cheese. Invariably, the cheese it's great for pasta filata cheeses, but we're still at a stage where we're figuring out how to make amazing, you know, washed rind cheeses, as well as whether or not, if possible at all, whether or not we could make aged cheeses, 6 to 8 month aged cheeses in this category of milk. And that's something that I personally am really interested in propagating ahead in future. Of course, mozzarella di bufala, having local North American mozzarella di bufala currently, I don't think anyone's doing it. Mm-hmm. I know there maybe a couple in Canada, but I don't know if anyone's doing it in the U.S., so I think there is something to be said about having local mozzarella, even if we live in the world, where we can get mozzarella in
absolutely. Yeah, very cool. Well, thank you both so much for coming on. And if all of you out there have Instagram, I'm going to post later tagging both of you guys on at Cutting the Curd. So check out Instagram. And thank you both. And we're going to just take a quick break and then have another segment about water buffalo.
Dairy Farm Families of Wisconsin and the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board are proud to underwrite Cutting the Curd on heritageradionetwork.org. Wisconsin cheeses have an illustrious heritage of more than 170 years of quality and craftsmanship. During this long and rich history, the art and science of cheesemaking have been captured in time-honored traditions that produce cheese varieties of unsurpassed excellence. Today, Wisconsin produces more than 600 varieties, types, and styles of American, international style, and original cheeses that win more awards than any other state or country. To learn more, visit www.eatwisconsincheese.com.
Welcome back to Cutting the Curd. This is Emily Acosta, and we're about to listen to a segment that was recorded at the American Cheese Society Conference earlier this year with Greg Blaze and Quattro Portoni.
Hello and welcome to Cutting the Curd. We're broadcasting live from the American Cheese Society Conference in Providence, Rhode Island. And we're very lucky to have with us today Mr. Bruno Gritti of Quattro Portoni, a buffalo milk producer in Italy that makes fantastic cheese. Buongiorno.
Buongiorno, Louis. Grazie.
Thank you very much for agreeing to talk to us today. I know that you just got out of a seminar where you were discussing buffalo milk and buffalo milk cheeses. For our listeners that don't know, I was wondering if you could explain to us a little bit about Quattro Portoni and how you came to work with it and what it's all about.
Dimmi un po' la domanda.
Voglio sapere un po' di Quattro Portoni, chi siete e perché avete iniziato?
Beh, siamo un'azienda agricola in provincia di Bergamo, abbiamo iniziato...
We're a company that's located in Colonia Sede in the province of Bergamo.
Sì, abbiamo iniziato la nostra attività nel 1980 con l'allevamento di mucche e successivamente ci siamo sviluppati fino ad avere quasi 1000 mucche in stalla per poi convertire il nostro allevamento da mucche a bufale.
Bruno and his brother Alfio started in 1982 as herders of cows, and as they were doing that for a long period of time they decided to make a switch to buffalo, which didn't happen or start to happen until the year 2000.
The lovely voice you hear is that of Michelle Buster, who is translating for us today. Thanks so much, Michelle.
Thanks.
So it was originally cows, you say?
Sì, siamo in una regione tipicamente vocata all'allevamento di mucche.
And pardon me if I already asked, but why buffalo milk cheeses? What was so interesting about them, and how did you get into making them in all of the different styles? You make mature styles or aged buffalo milk cheeses. Most of the buffalo cheese in the near past, now things are changing. Most of the cheese in the near past that I've dealt with as a cheesemonger has always been very fresh. All we ever got was mozzarella di bufala, but you make wonderful soft ripened cheeses like Quadrello di bufala and Cassatica and Morghello and the Blu di bufala. What inspired you to make those cheeses?
Non lo sapevo, sì, perché hai iniziato a fare formaggio di bufala. E...
Beh, diciamo che la nostra era una scelta quella di fare il formaggio che avevamo pensato da parecchio tempo. Non l'abbiamo mai fatto quando allevavamo le mucche, le vacche, perché per noi era importante fare un prodotto diverso, nuovo, che avesse un significato dal punto di vista del mercato.
So, Bruno says that when they... had cows, everybody around them made cheese, and they made cheese from cow's milk, so it wasn't interesting. But once they decided to raise buffalo, they wanted to make cheese, and they wanted to make cheese based on the traditions that they had in Lombardy and the rest of Italy, but also different.
What was the reception in Italy when you started making these cheeses, especially, you know, making them, you know, using the traditional recipes of Lombardia?
Qual era il comportamento di tutti gli italiani di tutti questi nuovi formaggi stagionati però con latte di bufala? Si sono piaciuti?
Se devo essere sincero, ho avuto meno difficoltà a vendere i nostri formaggi all'estero e a farlo conoscere all'estero. In Italia si è molto più legati alla tradizione e all'abitudine a consumare quello che si conosce.
It was much more difficult for him in Italy because people were used to their traditions and he had much more success to start with in the export.
Why do you think that is? Is it just that they wanted their traditional cheeses, or was there something fundamentally different about the way the cheeses tasted that made it more difficult for you to introduce it to the Italian market?
Così difficile solo perché sono tradizionali, sono abituati o
sì, in Italia esiste una mentalità per cui uno è italiano e quindi conosce tutto quello che riguarda il cibo.
Where he says in Italy the mentality is we're Italian, we know what's Italian and what's ours, and we know what we like.
Questo non succede per le persone curiose come Michel, per cui se vuole un prodotto nuovo, prima di tutto lo vuole provare.
So that doesn't exist for people like myself who are curious and are open-minded to just say, hey, let's give this a try.
So, well, just in, for... posterity's sake, when did Quattro Portoni come to be? When were the first cheeses that you made?
Ma il primo formaggio l'abbiamo fatto, se non sbaglio, il 23 di febbraio del 2006.
una cosa del... un ore specifico?
Sì, praticamente sì, perché era la prima volta che facevo un formaggio.
So he said, more or less, I think it was February 23rd, 2006. I asked if he knew the exact time, but he didn't tell me. E l'ora 15?
Sì, intorno alle 11:30 del mattino.
Possibly around 11:30 in the morning.
Have you changed people's minds in Lombardia? Are they buying your cheese and loving it now? Because it's very good.
Sì, diciamo che solo quelli più accorti, quelli più interessati anche al formaggio, si sono accorti che questi sono formaggi che hanno un potenziale molto interessante.
But, lì in Italia?
Sì, in Italia.
This is all of the people with an open mind and a little bit quick have realized that there is a lot of potential for this cheese.
So, how is milking a water buffalo different? How is this the operation to get, you know, just getting the milk out of those guys different from the getting it from the cows?
Come è diverso lattare la bufala che la mucca?
Beh, hanno un carattere diverso per certi gli animali, le bufale e le mucche. Per certi versi sono più gestibili le mucche, per altri versi sono più gestibili le bufale.
Some of the characteristics are easier with cows and some are easier with buffalo for milking, but they are very different.
What's the most difficult part of getting the milk out of the buffalo?
Qual è, scusa?
La parte più difficile di mungere...
I've heard that they're temperamental, or the animals are, that sometimes they just don't want to give you the milk.
Yeah.
Is that true?
Sì, sì, esatto. E la parte più difficile è quella. Bisogna creare le condizioni ambientali giuste, la calma, il silenzio, perché le bufale non si devono agitare. Sono animali timidi, se si agitano non danno latte.
He said, you're absolutely right. He said, you've got to make them feel really, really comfortable and calm, and it's got to be silent, and only then will they have the trust and not be scared and be willing to give up their milk.
That's really interesting. So do they know you or the people personally? If someone different comes in to milk them or to deal with them, they're like, they don't want to deal with that? They don't want that person around. That's how I am, mostly.
E se qualcuno cambia, chi va a fare la mungitura, si rendono conto?
Sì, si rendono assolutamente conto, conoscono le persone, conoscono anche chi saltuariamente viene in azienda e appena vedono qualcuno di nuovo, lo, diciamo, inquadrano subito.
He said that they know right away. He said they know everybody who milks them, everybody in the company, and they know right away if it's somebody different.
See, my mother taught me not to talk to strangers when I was a kid, so I'm exactly that way. If I don't know you, I don't know. I don't know if I trust you yet, you know what I mean? So in 1945, there were around 12,000 water buffalo bred for milk production, and today you've got about 970,000, which is a massive amount of water buffalo. And I was wondering if you could tell us why that increased so much.
Una ragione specifica non la conosco, probabilmente è dipeso proprio dal momento storico. C'è stato un grande incremento nell'economia italiana dopo la guerra e con questo è inciso anche lo sviluppo dell'allevamento della bufala. Probabilmente prima non era considerato un animale interessante, dopodiché invece si è visto una potenzialità in questo animale.
He said he doesn't have a concrete reason or a scientific data, but he said after the war the economy improved.
Okay.
So people had more acquisitive power. Buffalo milk became a more viable option. People didn't know it that much, and when they investigated with it, then it seemed that there was more potential for business, and that he feels that that might be the reason for this rapid growth.
Is it because, and I've heard, or in my research, that the water buffalo are less, even though they're choosy about the people they want to deal with them, they're less choosy about the vegetation that they eat, and that probably makes them a lot easier to tend, I would imagine, or the land doesn't have to be as perfect as it would for cows.
Quello che mi ha sempre detto, sono rustici.
Sì,
finché adesso sono rustici, sono facili, mangiano quello che trovano, non è che sono difficili in quel modo di fare.
Sì, da questo punto di vista sono animali che sfruttano molto bene i foraggi che hanno a disposizione, sono animali rustici che non si ammanano, che durano lungo. Anche questo è uno dei motivi fondamentali per cui la mandria generale di bufale può incrementarsi più velocemente che quella di bovini.
So he said, yes, that is definitely absolutely. He said that they're easier animals when it comes to eating what they find on the earth. They're also animals that are sturdier and hardier. They don't get injured as much, And all of these influence in the part that also to the lineage that makes it easier to having a stronger lineage and nucleus of buffalo and healthier animal because they take care of the genealogy so that they eventually now breed and do it to have very healthy animals. So therefore you have the increase in the population.
That's great. So if you can get them to give you the milk, they're good to have around, basically. If you can get them to do what you need them to do, then they can last for a long time. I like that. That's good. I like things that are stubborn. I'm a very stubborn person myself. So I wanted to talk to you specifically about one of your cheeses, and I'm never knowing if I pronounce it right. I pronounce it Casatica. But then people come and tell me it's Casatica. It's not, right? I can stand by that when people come up to my counter and tell me I'm not pronouncing it right. So it's Casatica di Bufala, right?
Yeah.
Thanks. I won that. I won that battle. I'm happy about that. And now the origins of that cheese, which is probably our most popular cheese at Italy that we sell of yours. People love it. It's rich. It's mellow, approachable, and it's very consistent. You guys are really consistent. It comes in the same way all the time, and we really love it. But it came about as a type of as an accident almost, right? It was you were attempting to make like a cacciotto or something like that, and then suddenly you had the Casatica. So how did that happen?
Sì, succede come tutte le volte che si cerca di fare una ricetta nuova, che durante il percorso si decide di cambiare strada, no? Allo stesso modo è successo con la Casatica, volevamo fare una cacciotta, ma il sapore della cacciotta che era stata prodotta non ci piaceva, abbiamo cambiato la ricetta, abbiamo aggiunto le muffe, abbiamo cambiato la forma, è stata un'evoluzione che è durata qualche tempo, dopodiché quando è uscita la Casatica ce ne siamo un po' innamorati, ci è piaciuta e quella è rimasta.
And it was more or less of an accident, just that like what they were making sort of helped determine what the eventual was. They made the semi-soft table cheese,
yeah.
And they weren't happy with it.
Uh-huh.
So they changed it here. They're like, let's add a little mold here. Let's change the shape. So they kept trial and error. Until finally they came out with something that they just like fell in love with and said, this is it. And this is what we want. And we're calling you Casatica.
Now, I know you probably aren't supposed to say that, but what's your favorite Quattro Portoni cheese?
Il mio prodotto preferito è il blu di bufala.
Blu di bufala?
Sì.
He's been saying the blu di bufala.
È quello che mi è costata più fatica, per cui...
Why he's the like most disciplined and stubborn, and that's why he likes it the most, because he's the most satisfied with the outcome.
I think you and I should have some drinks together later. I like that. I like that idea. So what's your opinion on water buffalo production or the dearth of water buffalo production in America? Do you think it's because people maybe aren't as patient to work with the animals here to get the milk? Because it seems like we have a lot of land. Maybe we should start, you know, taking an interest in raising these animals for milk.
Qual è l'opinione su che cosa? Non ho capito bene. Sull'allevamento.
Perché non ci sono i bufali qua? Perché ci sono così pochi allevatori di bufali qua? Vuole sapere. Qual è la tua opinione e il perché?
Beh, diciamo che la popolazione di bufali adatti all'allevamento è fondamentalmente quella italiana. Per cui gli animali vanno portati dall'Italia se si vogliono allevare qui.
He said to have any success here, first and foremost, that their only success rate would come from having an Italian buffalo. So that would be the first thing that dictates why and if there's any success to it.
Why is that?
Perché?
Perché il nucleo di bufali italiani è una razza specifica, si chiama bufala mediterranea, è quella che ha le migliori attitudini per produrre latte. Già produciamo pochissimo latte. Se non abbiamo neanche la razza giusta, rischiamo di avere una produzione troppo bassa.
The buffalo already produce so little milk, so they need to have a good lineage, and the Mediterranean buffalo that comes out of Italy is the best. This nucleus, which they call the founder's effect, has been the basis for them breeding really good buffalo that produce a good quantity of milk over time. And without that, if you don't have it, then you'll never get that milk from the buffalo, like
sure.
You were saying.
So it'll just be it won't be very sustainable in the long term. And other than having those breeds, what are your efforts to maintain sustainability in the Quattro Portoni organization?
La sostenibilità del nostro allevamento è fondamentalmente legata a un'attività che abbiamo intrapreso insieme a altre 21 aziende, che è quella di gestire tutti i rifiuti dell'azienda in un grande impianto di gestione per la produzione di biogas e quindi la produzione di energia elettrica che viene venduta e che serve per ripagare tutto l'impianto. Il risultato è che siamo riusciti a contenere la produzione di nitrati e di rispettare le normative, quindi avere un allevamento sostenibile.
So they grow 99% of their feed for the animals, one, but two, they got together with 21 other companies to create biogas from the waste.
Oh, wow.
And they create the biogas to produce energy, which then they sell off that can repay for all of the enormous costs that they have to have a sustainable dairy. The rest of the part of the waste is compacted down, they remove the nitrogen, and then they use that back for the fields.
What happens to all of the whey that's produced? Where do you send that down? Do you send that down to like a prosciuttificio, or does that get fed to hogs somewhere along the line?
No, il siero viene completamente riutilizzato in azienda nell'alimentazione delle bufale, per cui lo riutilizziamo per quello.
They feed the animals with the whey.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So everything stays on the farm or in and around the farm, one way or another.
Yes.
What's do you have any plans to make a new cheese for us in the future?
Sì, abbiamo in mente, anzi qualcosa abbiamo già prodotto,
sì.
Tipo un brew di bufala affinato nella birra che
birra.
we have outside, he just won an award actually for a new cheese called Surfing Blue.
Oh yes.
Which is the Blue de Bufala that's been soaked in Tocamalto's Surfing Hop beer.
Yeah. Oh, that's fantastic. And it's, I know it doesn't have a lot to do with buffalo milk production, but have you noticed how many more breweries have popped up in Italy over, say, the last like 5 or 6 years? You guys are brewing tons of beer over there now.
Ho visto quante volte in più birrifici ci sono in Italia in queste volte. Dice che sa che non è niente da fare con latte di bufala.
Sì, non ho capito di realtà.
E dice, hai visto quanti in più birrifici ci sono in Italia?
Sì, sì, certo. Chiaramente, la birra è un prodotto molto di moda anche in Italia.
Yeah.
E l'idea, it is.
Sì, l'idea di fare un formaggio affinato nella birra è stata quella di avvicinare un po' più il pubblico giovane a un formaggio, un prodotto che non è sempre così molto interessante per i giovani. Il matrimonio tra la birra e il formaggio credo che sia un matrimonio riuscito anche dal punto di vista del business.
He said that for them they were thinking that to attract a younger crowd it was a cool thing to make a cheese and a beer so that might have a little bit more accessibility to people who aren't that interested in the overall cheese thing.
Yeah, everybody loves beer. just as a not you though, Michelle. I could get you there, you know. What are your thoughts just on what are your thoughts on washing cheese in alcohol or in beer? Because I mean, I've sold a lot of washed rind cheeses, and I've met a lot of cheesemakers, and their opinion varies, but all of them seem to do it. What is the by soaking it in beer or washing, say, like if you washed Quadrello di Bufala in birra, what would that add to the cheese? Would it add to the texture and the flavor? How would that help the cheese?
Cioè, mi chiede come... Non ho capito bene la domanda. Cioè, vuol sapere se lo metto sotto la birra?
Sì, come può aiutare a sviluppare il formaggio?
Allora, sì, noi il formaggio che affiniamo nella birra lo immergiamo completamente nella birra. E questo ovviamente facilita l'ingresso della birra all'interno del formaggio. E successivamente ci sono più di 3 fasi nell'affinamento che non posso svelare ovviamente perché è un segreto che mi tengo per me.
He said that they're not washing the cheese with the beer right now, they're actually submersing it totally in the beer. That's their way of doing this one. And then he said there are 3 other phases after that which he doesn't really want to share.
No worries. I get that completely. Well, I want to really thank you for your time. I know you've been busy, Bruno, and thank you for all of the lovely cheese that you sent us. So if you haven't had cheese from Quattro Portoni, you better get out there and get some. And thanks, Michelle, for your lovely job translating.
My pleasure.
Have a great day. This is Greg Blaze.
Thank you, Greg,
signing off.
Emily.
Thanks for
for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awaeli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.